Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Trish reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. Party Chairs. No Straight Party Voting Means Longer Time at Polls, by Stuart Doreen. Local party leaders believe the lack of straight party voting options will mean it will take longer for people to fill out their ballots for the general election. The Democratic Party Chair in Midland County, Kathy Broderick, said to expect long lines and late results on Election Day, while Sherry Merkett, the Republican Party Chair, anticipates most Americans will have researched and vetted each and every candidate and will be prepared to vote for the person whom they feel is most qualified and will do the best job. Today is the first day of early voting period for the November 3rd election. Straight party voting allows a registered voter the option of just voting for one party in races where political parties are involved. In the 85th regular session of the Texas legislature in 2017, there was a majority support for elimination of straight ticket voting in Texas, State Representative Tom Craddock said in a statement. This change came after watching multiple other states do the same. Texas legislature voted after seeing judicial candidates removed from office due solely to the impact of straight ticket voting. The change is to support informed voting through the entirety of the ballot. I look forward to seeing how this works in this election cycle. In Midland County, more than 58% used the straight party option in 2016, a total which is up from 53.77% in 2004. With no straight party voting, it will take each voter considerably more time on the machines, Broderick said. Plus, we should anticipate a high voter turnout this November. There were 49,698 total voters in 2016, a record for a general election in Midland County. Historically, most of those voters have been Republican, and the percentages also show comparable results when it comes to the number of straight party ballots. Republicans accounted for 77.28% of the straight ticket ballots, Democrats 20.24%. In 2016, the highest percentage for Republicans in the last four presidential election cycles was in 2004, 80.8%. The highest percentage of straight party ballots on the Democratic Party side happened in 2008, 21.35%. I also believe that if a voter is going to take the time to cast their vote, then they will take the time to vote the whole ballot, Marquette said. I'm excited for this year's election and want to remind everyone that early voting begins today. I encourage everyone to exercise their privilege to vote. Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves told the Reporter-Telegram that there is a sample ballot on the county's election office website. An eligible voter can go through it and mark down their selections to shorten their time at the polling location. Broderick said voters can remedy potential long waits if they vote by mail or plan to vote during the early voting period, which has been extended to 3 weeks. I suggest voters avoid the more popular early voting locations at the Annex and the Centennial Library and go to Fairmont Park, Calvary Assembly, or St. Paul's Methodist during the early voting period, Broderick said. MISD board approves $70,000 settlement with Riddick. Board President, strength of district's case is reflected in the settlement, by Stuart Doreen. The Midland ISD board on Monday ended the district's Orlando Riddick era. Riddick resigned Monday after reaching a settlement agreement with the district he once led. The six board members present at a special meeting unanimously approved the settlement, which included a $70,000 payment in consideration of Riddick voluntarily resigning his position. Riddick had nearly 2 years left on his contract at an annual salary of $275,000 per year. Board President Rick Davis said the settlement agreement showed the strength of the district's case. He had stated previously this decision to part ways had to do with the district's academic performance. The district had metrics they expected to achieve, whether it was through Lone Star governance or state measures like the number of failing campuses, which went from 4 to 9 in 2019. We took into account the strength of our case, Davis said, and I think that's reflected in the settlement. And the settlement amount, we believe, is less than the attorney's fees and the court reporter fees and independent hearing examiner fees that we would have incurred if we would have undergone the entire process with Mr. Riddick, Davis said. Riddick's resignation was effective at 5 p.m. Monday. He will receive his full salary and benefits through that time. Riddick had been on administrative leave, but through the execution of the agreement, the board reinstated Riddick from administrative leave and rescinded the action to propose termination in the notice of proposed contract termination. His contract had been set to expire on June 30th, 2022. Riddick had been with the district since 2017. He came to Midland from Cedar Hill ISD, which is located just south of Dallas. Yeah, it brings it finality to our relationship with Mr. Riddick and allows us to move forward and pursue our new academic leader for the district and allow him to pursue the next chapter in his career. And both, it's in the best interest of both parties to do that. And that is why we're glad that we brought an end to the situation this evening with our vote tonight. The board on Monday selected the Walsh Gallegos firm to conduct a search for the next superintendent. John Trischetti III was the only trustee not in attendance at Monday's meeting. Commissioner's Court, Sheriff's Office to purchase armored vehicle for $300,000. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. The Midland County Sheriff's Office will soon acquire a $330,000 Lenco Bearcat armored vehicle after the purchase was approved by county commissioners on Monday. It will likely take 6 months to a year for MCSO to receive the vehicle, a representative for the Sheriff's Office said during the commissioner's court meeting. Because of what's going on in our nation right now, we are in a long line of wanting these type of vehicles, he said. Funding for the vehicle had already been budgeted for the 2021 fiscal year, commissioners said during the meeting. The commissioner's court previously had approved other riot equipment for the sheriff's office as well. In June, the commissioners approved $34,000 for body armor, shields, gas masks, and tear gas grenade launchers. County Judge Terry Johnson had told the Reporter-Telegram at the time that he had asked the MCSO to request the funds after protests were held in Midland following the death of George Floyd. Johnson said there was concern MCSO would not be properly protected if violence broke out at future protests. Additionally, on Monday, commissioners appointed a constable for Precinct 1 and extended a burn ban for Midland County. The Precinct 1 constable position has been vacant since David Greiner became sheriff in April. The court unanimously appointed Douglas Brown, who currently serves as the County Community Supervision Coordinator. Brown is running unopposed for Precinct 1 Constable on the November ballot. With the commissioner's appointment, he will take over for the remainder of Kreiner's term that began his own term in January. Constables in Texas are licensed peace officers who perform various law enforcement functions, including issuing traffic citations, serving warrants, and serving as bailiffs for the Justice of the Peace Court. The burn ban was first enacted in July in response to drought conditions and was set to expire this month. Action by the Commissioner's Court extended the ban for at least another 90 days until the end of January. Commissioners said the county's drought index, or potential for fire, is currently between 700 and 800. The scale maxes out at 800, meaning Midland County is facing an extremely high risk for wildfires. A map from the Texas A&M University Forest Service, updated Monday, shows most of West Texas is in the high end of the drought index. All forms of outdoor burning are prohibited under the burn ban. The next Commissioner's Court meeting will be held at 9 a.m. October 26th at the Midland County Courthouse. Bentley, PSP remains committed to census count, by Mike Smith of the Carlsbad Courant Argus. COVID-19 and changing deadlines caused the Permian Strategic Partnership to redraw plans in its drive to make sure those living in oil and gas producing counties in southeast New Mexico and West Texas are counted in the 2020 census. Chief Executive Officer Tracy Bentley said PSP remains committed in efforts to get everyone counted in the Permian Basin. We understood our region was at an increased risk of an undercount from the beginning, she said, of the census efforts. As communities began implementing stay-at-home orders and residents started to quarantine in their homes, we pivoted our messaging to encourage online and over-the-phone participation. We stayed up to date with changing deadlines and recommendations from the Census Bureau and tried to make sure our residents were aware of any updates through our Facebook page and media outreach. The U.S. Census Bureau originally announced a deadline of October 5th for counting to end despite a court order. U.S. District Judge Lucy Coe on October 1st issued an order clarifying her decree that the Census Bureau continue the count until October 30th. The order is in response to a lawsuit brought by the National Urban League and others. Bentley could not offer any figures on how many people in the Permian Basin have completed the census. Residents can still complete the census through the end of the month of October, so it's still too early to know. We look forward to learning more about what final response rates in our region look like from the Census Bureau, she said. The census enumeration rate was 99.8%. The enumeration non-response follow-up was 33.1%, and the self-response rate was 66.7% as of Wednesday. New Mexico's enumeration rate was 99.7%. The enumeration and non-response follow-up was 41.3%, and self-response rate was 58.4%, according to Wednesday figures. Texas had an enumeration rate of 99.9%. The enumeration non-response follow-up was 34.7%, and the self-response rate was 62.5%. Bentley said PSP had been focused on Eddy and Lee counties in New Mexico and Ector and Midland counties in Texas. Eddy County's total self-response rate was 56%, and the internet response rate in Eddy County was 41.1%. Lee County's total self-response rate was 54.4%, and the internet response rate was 41.3%. Midland County had a higher total self-response and internet rate than Ector County, according to census numbers. Midland County's total self-response rate was 57.6%, and the internet response rate was 48.6%. Ector County's total self-response rate was 52.6%, and the internet response rate was 35.9%. I think these numbers reveal some of the struggle of counting hard-to-reach communities in the face of the coronavirus pandemic and the impact of cutting response efforts short. For example, in both Eddy and Lee counties, Census Bureau data shows self-response numbers in 2010 in the 2010 count were roughly 6% higher. She said the Permian Counts was launched earlier this year as an educational campaign to maximize 2020 census participation across the Permian Basin in Texas and New Mexico. We look forward to seeing what the response rate means for the region in terms of federal funding. We hope we've demonstrated the growth of the Permian Basin has experienced over the last decade and can secure crucial funding for our communities. We hope we've shown that the Permian counts, Bentley said. City reports 86th COVID fatality from staff reports. The city on Monday reported Midland County's 86th confirmed coronavirus-related death. The patient, a man in his 60s, died Sunday at Midland Memorial Hospital. He had underlying health conditions, according to the press release from the city spokeswoman. It was the first COVID-19-related death announced in more than a week. The Midland Health Department also reported 68 new confirmed COVID-19 cases, which are reflective of lab results from Friday through Sunday, according to the release. These cases bring Midland County's total during the pandemic to 4,244. The number of cases reported on Monday was 24 more than was reported on October 5th and 16 more than was reported 2 weeks ago. The Health Department's Monday report indicates there are 1,424 active cases, an increase of 46 compared to Friday, and 2,509 people have recovered, an increase of 16. Abbott sending COVID-19 surge team to El Paso. Austin. An ongoing wave of COVID-19 cases in the El Paso area prompted Governor Greg Abbott to announce Monday that a surge team of medical professionals would be dispatched to the area. The 75 doctors, nurses, and respiratory therapists being dispatched will be accompanied by a supply of extra personal protective equipment to support efforts by El Paso hospitals to meet the surge of coronavirus infections. The team will be in addition to the 169 professionals the state previously sent to the area. As of Monday, 313 people were hospitalized with COVID-19 in El Paso, Hudspeth, and Culberson counties of West Texas. The state estimated that active COVID-19 cases in El Paso County alone soared from almost 4,000 on October 1st to just over 6,000 on Monday. Midland News Briefs, Texas Size Garage Sale continues. The Texas Size Garage Sale, the annual fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, continues today at 407 East Scarborough Drive. There are two sessions, 9 to 11 and noon to 2. Because of social distancing guidelines, the sale was expanded to 6 days and only 100 people are allowed inside in each session. The sale continues Thursday, October 20th and October 22nd. A flu shot clinic set for those 60 and older. A flu vaccination clinic for residents 60 and older will be held this month at the Midland Health Department at Kingsway Mall, 3303 West Illinois Avenue. The clinic will be from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. The health department also provides clinical services by appointment, 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information or to make an appointment, call 681-7613.
Hello, this is Michael reading the opinion column from the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. Opinion Extra. Voters should educate themselves to prepare for casting a ballot. Today is a big day for many in Midland County. It's the first day that eligible voters can cast ballots for the November 3rd general election. Are you ready? There is no rule that you have to vote today or during the early voting period, but many Midlanders like to do so. More than 78.6% of the 49,498 people who cast a ballot in 2016 did so during the early voting period. If we see similar numbers during the 16 early voting days this year, that would be an average of 2,443 voters a day. As you know, there are five locations for early voting. A majority of voters will go to the Midland County Elections Office on A Street. The next most popular location is the Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch on Loop 250. I'm planning to go to one of the three other sites, St. Paul United Methodist Church, Fairmont Park Church of Christ, and Calvary Assembly of God. For those looking for a quicker experience, I expect that will be your best shot. Weekday early voting times through October 23rd are 8 a.m. to 5 p.m. Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves told the Reporter-Telegram there is no straight-party ticket voting for this election. That means you can't just vote Republican, Democrat, Green Party, and be done with most of the ballot. You will need to go through the entire ballot race by race to make your vote count. The legislature made this change during the last session. Graves said this might catch people off guard and recommends voters bring a sample ballot filled out. There is a sample ballot on the election office's website, co.midland.tx.us/375/sample-ballots. Also, a list of all the races appears in today's edition. Save for yourself and others in line a little time by being prepared. Educate yourself on the races you will be voting. An educated vote is the best vote. The League of Women's Voters Guide to Elections ran in Monday's Reporter Telegram, and all of the Reporter Telegram's election coverage can be found at mrt.com. Here's some good news. Barring a runoff, which is a possibility for a few races on the ballot, this will be the last election for the foreseeable future. The lone local election for 2021 is City Council. At large, and districts 1 and 2 will be on the ballot in November. Going back to November 2019, we have had enough elections to last a lifetime. There have been elections for city council, including mayor, a Midland ISD bond election, a city council special election, primary elections, primary runoffs, a hospital sales tax election, and now the general election. Yeah, we could use a break. But for now, there is a little business to take care of. The 2020 general election could be the first 50,000 vote election in the county's history. So, as has been written before, be prepared, be patient, and make your voice heard. Editor Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at H-E-A-R-S-T-N-P MidlandReporterTelegram.com.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, October 13, 2020. Naylor Remembrance. Sarah Gray sings Amazing Grace outside the Midland County Sheriff's Office Friday during a remembrance ceremony for Sergeant Mike Taylor, who died October 9, 2014, in the line of duty. Texas Size Garage Sale continues. Texas Size Garage Sale, the annual fundraiser for Meals on Wheels, continues today at 407 East Scarborough Drive. There are two sessions, 9 to 11 a.m. and noon to 2 p.m. Because of social distancing guidelines, the sale was expanded to 6 days, and only 100 people will be allowed in each session. The sale continues Thursday, October 20 and October 22. There will not be a 50% off day, but the nonprofit might do that in December or January, said Tracy Rinton, Development Director for Senior Life. Flu shot clinic set for those 60 and older. A flu vaccination clinic for residents 60 and older will be held this month at the Midland Health Department, Kingsway Mall, 3303 West Illinois Avenue. The clinic is 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Tuesdays and Thursdays. The health department also provides clinical services by appointment only, 8:15 a.m. to 3:45 p.m. Monday through Friday. For more information or to make an appointment, call 681-7613. Revival is planned. Kingdom Encounter Weekend, described as a revival of repentance and restoration, is planned for 6 p.m. Friday through Sunday at 6612 Farm to Market Road 307. The event is being presented by Kingdom Encounter Ministries, according to an email from one of the organizers. For more information, text REVIVAL 432 to 94090. St. Luke's Pumpkin Patch continues. Pumpkin Patch is now open at St. Luke's United Methodist Church, 3100 West Louisiana Avenue. Hours are 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Monday through Saturday, and noon to 5 p.m. Sunday through October 31, or when organizers run out of pumpkins, according to a press release. Pumpkins are priced by size and begin at $1. There will be books to read in the patch and coloring sheets. Social distancing must be maintained and health recommendations followed. Library has Wizard of Oz Route 66 exhibits. The Midland County Public Library Centennial Branch is hosting Wizard of Oz educational exhibit through December 19, and the Downtown Branch will display America's Road, the journey of Route 66 through January 4. The Oz exhibit is based on the Warner Brothers film and features movie elements such as Dorothy's Ruby Slippers, Munchkin Land, The Witch's Castle, and Emerald City, according to a press release from MCPL. America's Road includes photographs, large-scale replicas, and panels, and an original 1965 Ford Mustang that is parked inside the walkway near the library entrance. The 2,448-mile stretch of asphalt crosses through 8 states from the Midwest to the Pacific Coast and draws thousands of travelers each year. The exhibits will be cleaned multiple times a day, and visitors must wear masks or face coverings. The branches are open 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays and 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturdays. City watering schedule. The City of Midland has adjusted the watering schedule from 2 days a week to 4 days a week. Even-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Odd-numbered addresses can water on Sunday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday. The Utilities Department says residents should not overwater the lawn and should watch for puddles or runoff from sprinklers. Today in history. Today's Tuesday, October 13, the 287th day of 2020. There are 79 days left in the year. On this date, in 1932, President Herbert Hoover and Chief Justice Charles Evans Hughes laid the cornerstone for the U.S. Supreme Court building in Washington.
Obituaries and death notice. This is for October 13th, 2020. Anita Gail Blount, B-L-O-U-N-T. Anita Gail Blount, 74, of Midland, passed away Wednesday, October 7th. Anita is survived by her husband of 54 years, Fred Blount of Midland, son Wesley Ty Blount, and wife Shana of Midland, daughter Christy Leanne Moore and husband Jake of Pflugerville, sisters Sharon Matney of Lubbock and Laura McKenzie and husband Jerry of May, brother-in-law Tommy Blount and wife Faye of Leveland, 6 grandchildren, Devin Prudhomme and husband Grant, Piper and Parker Colbert, and Taylor, Braden, and Connor Blount, and 4 great-grandchildren. Public viewing will be Tuesday, October 13th from 4 to 8 at Ellis Funeral Home. The family will receive friends from 5 to 7. Funeral services will be Wednesday, October 14th, 2020 at 1 p.m. at Fairmont Park Church of Christ. Jubal Reed, Carter James, Scott Mims, Wayne Fowler, Kent Galtney, and David Scardino will serve as pallbearers. Honorary pallbearers are the elders of the church. Barbara Tom Joel. Barbara Tom Joel was born on October 5th in 1937. She is survived by her two daughters, Tricia Joel Mishy and husband Earl, and Shelley Joel Smith and her husband Chip. Her grandchildren, the light of her life, Joe Hudson Cobb and Lauren of Austin, Ford Hardin Smith of Los Angeles, California, Maddie Tom Cobb of Austin, and Clayton Addison Smith and Nicole of Midland, and two great-granddaughters, Addison Elizabeth Smith and Paige Maddie Cobb. She's also survived by her brother, James Robert Tom Kay of Burney, and numerous nieces and nephews. Her brother, the family, will have a private interment service at Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity Wednesday, October 14th. Due to COVID-19, an outdoor gathering to celebrate Barbara's wonderful life will be held on the front lawn of Holy Trinity Church. The gathering will begin at 10:45, immediately following the private service. Masks will be provided and social distancing will be observed. Live streaming will be available at 10 a.m. by clicking on the Barbara Joel funeral link at holytrinity.org. Memorials may be directed to the Midland Memorial Foundation, Barbara Tom Joel Endowment Fund, 400 Rosalind Redfern Grover Parkway, Midland, Texas, 79701, or the Episcopal Church of the Holy Trinity at 1412 West Illinois in Midland, 79701. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Picklin Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at npwelch.com. Death notices. Martin Lerma Lopez, 94, of Midland, Texas, passed away Saturday, October 10th. The viewing will be Tuesday, October 13th from 2 p.m. to 9 p.m. with a rosary to be recited at 7 p.m. at Llewellyn Garcia Pipkin Funeral Home. A funeral service is set for Wednesday, October 14th, 2020 at 10 a.m. at Our Lady of Guadalupe Parish and Shrine. Burial will follow at Fairview Cemetery. He is survived by three sons, Jesse Lopez, Raymond Lopez, and Martin Lopez Jr., and one daughter, Margarita Chata Gerardo, and one sister.
Hello, this is Michael reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, October 13th, 2020. Front page. Man and woman charged in connection to death of 8-year-old girl. An autopsy of an 8-year-old girl reportedly detailed she had died from dehydration after a 44-year-old man and a 34-year-old woman forced her to continuously jump on a trampoline and didn't allow her to drink water in the West Texas heat. Daniel Schwartz, 44, and Ashley Schwartz, 34, were both charged with capital murder, a capital felony. The Odessa Police Department responded to a medical call August 29th in the 4300 block of Locust Avenue, an OPD press release stated. The girl was pronounced dead at the scene. Investigation showed the girl had been punished. She wasn't allowed to eat breakfast, and she was required to jump on the trampoline without stopping for an extended period of time. The girl also wasn't allowed to drink any water because she was not jumping. A search warrant was reportedly obtained, and the temperature of the trampoline was 110 degrees Fahrenheit, and the ground was 150 degrees Fahrenheit. OPD received the final autopsy on October 8th, which listed the manner of death as homicide and the cause of death to be dehydration, the press release stated. OPD spokesperson Corporal Steve Lasore told the Odessa American on Monday afternoon that Daniel Schwartz and Ashley Schwartz were the non-biological parents of the girl. Lasore said he couldn't confirm if the child was in foster care. Daniel Schwartz and Ashley Schwartz were each booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on Monday, jail records show. Neither had bonds set as of Monday afternoon. Judge rules in favor of Odessa American. A visiting state district judge has denied the city of Odessa's request to dismiss a lawsuit by the Odessa American to force the city to comply with public information laws. It took only a few days for Judge Rodney Satterwhite to review arguments and rule Monday that the Odessa American's lawsuit should be allowed to proceed. Attorneys for the city wanted Satterwhite to dismiss the lawsuit, arguing in a hearing Thursday that as a matter of jurisdiction, the judge did not have the power to adjudicate the legal matter. But attorneys representing the newspaper countered that the city's alleged violations of the Texas Public Information Act were obvious and that the OA's claim was a cut-and-dry legal issue that the judge had every right to decide. We are pleased with this ruling and will proceed with prosecuting our case because the public has a right to public information and records, and the city is legally obliged to provide it, not control and censor it, OA publisher Patrick Canty said. The motion that was denied was merely a case of the city's attorneys scattering marbles on the floor, tactics aimed at delaying this case in hopes we would tire of it and go away. We will never tire of fighting to uphold laws in place to ensure the free flow of public information to the citizenry and to the news media. It's a cornerstone of a free and civil society. The attorneys representing the city of Odessa stated during Thursday's court proceedings if the judge didn't rule in their favor, that they would appeal. The city has spent more than $60,000 fighting the lawsuit so far, and that number doesn't include September or October billing. Maitreya Tomlinson, a board-certified civil appellate attorney in Austin, said in a phone interview Monday an appeal could take a minimum of 6 months before a decision was rendered and that it could cost Odessa taxpayers an additional $30,000. That's in a perfect world, Tomlinson said about the appeal process. Most practitioners ask for extensions, and chances are, especially in the pandemic, they will get them. The OA called the attorneys for the city and Mayor David Turner for comment, but those calls were not returned. Kelly Shannon, the executive director of the Freedom of Information Foundation of Texas, stated in an email that citizens must watch over their government and they need information to do so. That includes access to basic crime and police records. It's unfortunate the city of Odessa is spending precious taxpayer money, especially during this pandemic when resources are needed for other purposes, to fight in court against a foundation of our democracy, the public's ability to seek and obtain government information, Shannon wrote. The newspaper sued the city in January, alleging the entity was violating the Texas Public Information Act, TPIA, by failing to release in a timely manner police reports and probable cause affidavits. Oftentimes, the paper was forced to file a Freedom of Information request for routine public reports. The FOI requests and reports, frequently peppered with redactions, were usually referred to the state attorney general's office for review, a move that only added to the delay in basic crime information getting to the public. The city began this practice after the 2019 Labor Day weekend mass shooting in Odessa, and some city representatives later explained they were upset that local news organizations had access to the names of the shooting victims so soon after the tragedy. Attorneys for the city argued during Thursday's hearing that the city implemented this new procedure to ensure sensitive or inappropriate information was not being released. They added that the newspaper was upset because they liked the old arrangement in which the reports and their content, some of it described by them as salacious, were so easily obtained. But the newspaper has never sought to obtain or publish information that would be inappropriate, such as the names of sexual assault victims or juveniles, and Canty noted that they are bound by ethics and never would. It's as if the newspaper were a pouty adolescent throwing a tantrum because mama wouldn't let him eat chocolate cupcakes for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, Canty said of the city's depiction of the OA during the hearing. That couldn't be further from the truth. Essentially, they wanted to fix a system that was never broken, and it is a system, grounded in law, that has always been practiced and adhered to by government entities, the public, and news organizations through the state. And we feel strongly that they are legally bound to provide information in police reports and other public documents that the citizenry is entitled to see. Instead of trying to manage and control the free flow of public information, they ought to focus on following the law, he said. Representing the OA is John Busian, a national authority on First Amendment law, Midland attorney Randall Rouse, and Houston attorney Jeff Nobles. The city is represented by William Cobb and Ann Staling of the Austin-based firm Cobb & Counsel. Helping Children. New Pediatrician Strives to Improve Children's Lives by Ruth Campbell. Treating children and enabling them to become successful in life is something new family health clinic pediatrician Dr. Atul Podel strives for. Podel is board certified by the American Board of Pediatrics, General Pediatrics, and Pediatric Nephrology, and is a fellow of the American Academy of Pediatrics. A native of Kathmandu, Nepal, he completed his training in New Jersey and Florida and has been in practice for more than 10 years. He treats patients from newborn to 18 years old. He earned the James Murrill MD Continuity Clinic Award for Excellence in Ambulatory Care from the Mount Sinai School of Medicine, St. Joseph Children's Hospital, and Henry A. Cocamore Award from the University of Florida Department of Pediatrics. Some of his training and schooling was in Nepal. Before arriving in Odessa, Podel was at Our Lady of the Lake Children's Hospital, the largest healthcare system in Louisiana. He was in Mississippi before that as a faculty member at the University of Mississippi School of Medicine. After his training in the Northeast, he did his fellowship in pediatric nephrology at the University of Florida in Gainesville, and then joined the faculty at the medical school. Podel said there are only 600 pediatric nephrologists in the country, and he was the only one covering almost half of Louisiana. Children can face all manner of kidney issues, from urinary tract infections to kidney stones and cysts. From the time he was a child, Podel said he knew he wanted to help people. While he was doing his pediatric residency training in Nepal, Podel said there was a Maoist insurgency. The hospital he was working in was located between an army barracks and the Maoists. The Maoists were attacking the army, and the hospital was in between. That night, Podel said, they hid under an operating room table the whole night. After that, I felt very unsafe. Then I got out and came here, he said. Since his father was in the Foreign Service in Nepal, Podel said he traveled a lot as a child. He added that he never felt out of place in New York and New Jersey because of the diversity. One day, Podel said he and his colleagues had to call for translations for up to 15 languages. They would see 30 to 40 patients inside the ER, and another 100 would be waiting outside. Doing your training is a really busy place that gives you that opportunity to learn more and be comfortable with all kinds of things, Podel said. He added that he enjoys working with underserved communities, where his service is valued and he can be a useful part of the community. I don't look at the insurance. I don't look at the color of people. I don't look at what background they come from. I just treat people as a human. That is my goal. This area is an underserved area. There is a lot of demand here. There is a lot of demand for general pediatric regular care plus specialty care, which I have additional training in, Podel said. He added that he's already gotten calls from people around the region for kidney care. Because he can help them, people don't have to drive as far to larger cities. Podel is married to Prasita Joshi, an architect, and has two daughters. He says he enjoys treating children because he has found that with treatment and therapies, they will get better and heal. Dr. Johnny Herrera, ProCare Medical Director at Medical Center Health System, said the hospital is pleased to have Podel on board. He has an expertise in pediatric nephrology that has not seen before in our area. His knowledge of this specific area will allow our pediatric patients to be seen in the Permian Basin, rather than having to travel a few hours to Lubbock or Dallas. Dr. Podel will be serving an area of the community that is underserved and that shows the kind of physician he is, Herrera said in an email. Juvenile detention plan aired. Commissioners view issuing $20 million in debt to finance new center. Ector County commissioners today will consider issuing about $20 million in certificates of obligation to build a new juvenile detention center and replace the 46-year-old facility that has become increasingly dilapidated. The court on August 11th passed a resolution authorizing the issuance of debt to construct a new center in place of the old 48-bed one at 1401 East Yukon Road, which has had numerous compliance problems with the Texas Juvenile Justice Department related to the building's soundness. Court members subsequently said the best location is west of the Ector County Detention Center on land the county owns west of U.S. 385, south of town. Precinct 3 Commissioner Dale Childers said the project had become feasible because the county had paid off most of its $7 million debt from 2015 to buy equipment and put $2 million into a land acquisition fund. We've been having a hard time meeting the state standards because they have changed so much since the 1970s, Childers said. I've been out there and I've seen the issues. Center Director Kevin Mann said the 33,100 square foot facility's issues include damages to the metal paneling in the gym and the seepage of rainwater into some rooms where the walls meet concrete flooring. We've had plumbing issues where the lines backed up in front of the building and flooded the offices and the courtroom and conference room, Mann said. We have insecure doors and windows because the door frames and ceiling tiles are rotting out. They had a lot of truants and runaways in the 70s, but now the building gets a lot of abuse because the type of kids we're holding are more destructive. We have more at-risk kids and aggravated felony offenders, and the building is not designed to provide for those kinds of kids. In other business in the 10 a.m. meeting today at the 1010 East 8th Street Administration Building, the court will hold a public hearing on reestablishing a reinvestment zone for tax abatements related to Aurigis Energy USA's $600 million Rockhound solar project south of Interstate 20 near Pinwell. That item has been tabled twice while a contract was worked out between Aurigis and the county, with Odessa Chamber of Commerce Development Director Wesley Burnett urging approval on behalf of the Grow Odessa Group. The court will also review transferring $20,350 from contract services to road maintenance operations in the sales tax district fund. Consider financing the paving of all Caliche roads with a $580,000 budget amendment from the unreserved fund balance to road maintenance operations in the sales tax district fund. Consider passing a resolution commending the work of the Safe Place Shelter for Battered Women and Children in recognition of October's being Domestic Violence Awareness Month. Discuss the county's Fix West Texas program. Consider enrolling county employees in a cybersecurity course. Review writing a letter of intent to the Texas Department of Transportation's Aviation Division regarding improvements at Schlemeyer Field. Consider Precinct 4 Commissioner Armando Rodriguez's request to demarcate three spaces in the administration building parking lot for spaces in which First Basin Credit Union customers may do business. Discuss awarding a low bid of $136,250 through the Sourcewell Cooperative Purchasing Program for the purchase of a 14-yard Kenworth dump truck for the Public Works Department. Consider buying a reach-in refrigerator for the Health Department. Discuss approving a certificate of substantial approval of Phase 1 of roofing projects on county buildings. Review approving a contract with Alcohol Monitoring Systems Incorporated. Consider okaying a contract with Pivot Technology Services Corporation for a pre-trial video check-in system. Discuss renewing the county's Workman's Compensation Program coverage with the Texas Association of Counties. Consider renewing a contract with Travelers Indemnity for the coverage of property, inland marine, commercial general liability, commercial auto liability, commercial auto physical damage, commercial umbrella and excess liability, employee benefits liability, law enforcement liability, public entity management liability, UAV drone hull and liability, and public entity employment-related practices liability. Review transferring $20,350 from contract services to road maintenance operations in the sales tax district. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 5,347. Ector County negative, 23,912 out of 29,593 tested, with 334 pending, 102 deaths. Recovered, 4,488. Active, 757. Midland County, 4,176 confirmed cases with 85 deaths. Texas, 795,126 confirmed with 6,951,394 tested. Total Texas deaths, 16,558. U.S. cases, 8,034,818 total confirmed, and 219,998 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us. Free COVID-19 testing. The City of Odessa, in partnership with the University of Texas Permian Basin, has scheduled free mobile COVID-19 testing events at the following times, dates, and locations. Wednesday, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Floyd Gwynn Park parking lot, 1015 North County Road West. October 21st, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Woodson Park parking lot, 1020 East Murphy Street. October 28th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Slater Park parking lot, 1001 West 38th Street. November 4th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Central Park, East 13th Street parking lot. November 18th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m., Ratliff Stadium parking lot, 1862 East Yukon Road. Only 200 tests will be administered at each event for Odessa and Ector County residents. First come, first serve. Residents must show proof of residency. Participants must remain in their vehicle with the window up until a testing team member approaches you. No appointments or pre-registration required. Children as young as 3 years old are eligible for testing. For more information, call 557-6557 or visit www.odessatx.gov/residents/health/coronavirus-covid-19-updates-information/mobile-covid-19-testing. Quick hits. Tejano Super Show. The 49th Tejano Super Show has been scheduled for November 22nd at the Ector County Coliseum, 4201 Andrews Highway. Doors open to the public noon to 5 p.m. The Lowrider 2021 sanction event will include cars, trucks, motorcycles, bikes, pedal cars, food vendors, and more. Registration may be made online. To register or for more information, call 337-2189 or text 653-3710 or email tejano@sbcglobal.net or visit tejanosupershow.com. From staff reports. Council returns to creation of PFC. By Michael Merlo. The Odessa City Council will vote on the creation of an Odessa Public Facility Corporation, which would give council members the ability to work with developers to create housing in Odessa during the Tuesday council meeting. The meeting will be held at 6 p.m. today, October 13th, in the council chambers located on the fifth floor of City Hall at 411 West 8th Street. The PFC would be a corporation made up of City Council, which would give council members the ability to work with developers to not only identify locations that would be ideal for the construction of homes, but to be involved in every aspect of that development, City Manager Michael Marrero said during a previous work session. The council tabled the item at its September 22nd meeting after some Odessans expressed concerns regarding the tax breaks to developers, as well as the lack of regulation on what developers built as far as quality and room size. Odessan Larry Robinson showed up to that meeting to ask council to table the item. He spoke about PFC loopholes for developers to benefit from the programs in other cities. Houston's complaining. They call them stack and pack little boxes, and they write it all off, and they don't pay city taxes, and they don't pay sales tax and development. Then it robs the true developers, he said in a previous interview, adding that research shows that there is little or no benefit to those needing affordable housing. Attorney Jim Plummer of the law firm Bracewell LLP discussed some of the concerns of citizens that they had during an October 6th work session. Plummer has also worked with the San Antonio Housing Trust PFC board. Plummer said via FaceTime during the in-person work session that all council is discussing is the creation of a public facility corporation, and that is just another tool for economic development, and it's often used to develop workforce housing. As far as I know, there are no projects, no plans. The only step that the council would take at this point is actually creating a corporation. Whether that corporation is ever used or not will be decided in the future once a proposed project is put in place, Plummer said. The key benefit to the city, Plummer said, is that it lets you decide where or how this tool might be used, he said, detailing that the PFC has been useful in efforts to redevelop cities or to develop workforce housing in areas that are in need of such housing. This is not a tool to support low-income housing. Low-income housing is best done in conjunction with using low-income housing tax credits, he said. He said that the PFC would be used to develop an area of the town that hasn't had much development. Marrero previously said that at least 50% of the units have to be available to low-income residents. Marrero said in a phone interview Monday that the way the PFC works is that there's 50% at market rate and 50% available to persons earning less than 80% of the median income, and as of federal guidelines, persons earning less than 80% income are considered low income. Plummer said that a benefit would also be to open the market up to developers to develop different areas of town. I don't think we have broadened any purposes beyond that, he said. District 2 council member Dewey Bryant said that he wanted to make sure that the PFC would not set up a competition between the Odessa Housing Finance, which Plummer said would not. At-large council member Peggy Dean asked Plummer to provide two or three contracts of successful PFCs and a couple of contracts of PFC projects that didn't work as planned. I understand the theory, and it makes a lot of sense, but you know, the public has sent us several articles of ones that do not work, she said, adding that it would be better to get in contact with people who have more experience with those projects to understand the ups and downs. Plummer said he'd be happy to get her the contract for every PFC in the state if she wants, and said that the articles Dean was referring were written by people who were analyzing the PFC project as if it were a low-income project. If you look at a public facility corporation project and you say, well, it doesn't deliver enough low-income units, then to me, you're missing the purpose the community was attempting to achieve, he said. He said that some PFCs help set the tone of the quality of what is being done in a portion of the city, and said that the projects are set to achieve city goals. District 4 council member Tom Sprawls asked Plummer about his involvement in San Antonio PFC projects and further about who has oversight, how often those are audited, and what kind of recourse there is in the event of a violation. The oversight can be whatever level you want, Plummer said, adding that the PFC can set the terms. He also said that every project that he has done requires quarterly reporting and annual audits. We have not had any issues to date in terms of people, developers, not doing exactly what they say, he said. And if they didn't, developers could lose a property tax exemption. Robinson was at the work session and asked about tax exemptions. Plummer said that the goal would be to gain more revenue from those projects than local entities could make from property taxes. Council will also open a public hearing to consider the first approval amending the Odessa City Code Chapter 4 Business Regulations, Article 4 through 6, Peddlers and Itinerant Vendors, Section 469, Permit Required for Peddlers, Solicitors, and Itinerant Vendors, as well as consider a resolution allocating $850,000 in CARES Coronavirus Relief Funds, CRF, to Ector County Independent School District, ECISD, for the purchase of devices to facilitate distance learning and technological improvements. In other business, consent agenda. These items are considered to be routine or have previously been discussed and can be approved in one motion unless a council member asks for separate consideration of an item. Consider approval of City Council Minutes, September 22, 2020. Consider approval of City Council Work Session Minutes. Consider approval of the request by Halliburton Energy Services owner Mulitech Agent for original zoning of heavy industrial, HI, on lots 1 and 2, Block 1, Halliburton Subdivision, second filing, Odessa, Ector County, Texas, south of the intersection of Interstate 20 and FM 1936. Ordinance, second and final approval. Consider the purchase of new fire station alerting, FSA, system with MAC Alert. Other council action. Consider bid award for the water treatment plant generator integration project for $488,108. Public hearings. Open a public hearing to consider amending the Odessa City Code Chapter 4 Business Regulations, Article 4-6, Peddlers and Itinerant Vendors, Section 469, Permit Required for Peddlers, Solicitors, and Itinerant Vendors. Ordinance, first approval. Open a public hearing to consider approval of the request by Tabitha McElhenney, owner, for a specific use permit to allow a beauty shop one-chair accessory use in a single-family 3, SF3, zoning district on Lot 21, Block 13, Scottsdale West, 5 Cody Court. Ordinance, first approval. Open a public hearing to consider approval of the request by Tyler Bradley, owner, S.W. Howell, agent, for original zoning of light industrial, LI, on proposed Lot 1, Block 1, Metal Solutions Edition, southwest of the intersection of Interstate 20 and Crane Avenue. Ordinance first approval. Resolution. Consider approval of an interlocal cooperation contract with the University of Texas Permian Basin for street services. Consider approving resolution of amended payment schedule to Apergy to reflect an initial payment of $400,000 instead of $300,000. Consider a resolution allocating $850,000 in CARES Coronavirus Relief Funds, CRF, to Ector County Independent School District, ECISD, for the purchase of devices to facilitate distance learning and technological improvements. Consider adopting a new rate review mechanism with Atmos Energy. Appointment of Boards, Council. Citizen comments on non-agenda items. Recess for an executive session.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.